Hi, and welcome to episode 5 of Once Upon a Nightmare. I am your host, Lorraine, and I'm here to discuss the horrors of the world, be it fictional or real. This week, we are going real. Unfortunately, this is not a story made up in someone's head to shock an audience, but the story of a young girl who met one of the most evil men out there. So welcome to True Crime Tuesday for the story of the survivor that is Mary Vincent, the girl who lived after the brutal attack of Lawrence Singleton. This story, and it was one that really stuck with me. All crimes against another person are of course abhorrent, but some obviously more than others have that impact that you're not quite expecting. But this girl, what a bloody strong case for doing whatever it takes to survive. It's one of those crimes that makes you wonder why you ever complain about physical activity, because I have no idea how this girl found not only the mental strength but also the physical strength to do what she did. So anytime I feel like complaining because I have to walk up a steep hill or lift something heavy, I'm just going to keep remembering this 15-year-old girl and remember what she did to save her own life. Mary Vincent had run away from home and at only 15 years old decided to hitchhike back to her family. She was missing them and desperately wanted to get back home. So she left California and started to make the journey back to her home in Nevada on the 29th of September 1978. While waiting for someone to stop, she was joined by two other hitchhikers heading in the similar direction. When a man with a van pulled over, he said he only had room for one. Despite the fact, upon looking at the van, they all realised that there was plenty of room for all three of them, but he was only willing to take Mary. Against Mary's better judgment, and also the concern of the other hitchhikers telling her not to get in, Mary Vincent in fact climbed into the van. She so desperately wanted to get back home and decided that she was going to do whatever it took. This decision would forever change her life. Hitchhiking back then was more of a norm compared to today, so it wouldn't be out of the question for a young woman to hitchhike alone. Plus, Mary didn't believe in the level of evil that she was about to encounter. She never thought there was people like that in the world. And after all, getting into a van with someone who just looks like your grandfather couldn't be bad. Unfortunately for Mary, this granddad looking guy was an absolute piece of shit. There are many killers out there to despise, but this guy really does take it to a whole new level with me. Not only because of what he did, which is something I couldn't imagine in my wildest nightmares, but also because of what he did when he was caught, when he was imprisoned, just how he conducted himself after. Let's be honest, you wouldn't expect much more, but when looking into a story like this, you will be absolutely flabbergasted. After a tired Mary got into the van, she soon dozed off as she began the long journey home. On awakening through a blurred sleepy head, she noticed the signs were not going in the right direction. Mary told him he was going the wrong way and he knew he was going the wrong way. Singleton, trying to put Mary's mind at ease, simply told her, "Just an honest man who made a mistake." When she questioned what he was doing, he pulled over to the middle of a deserted road. This is when Mary knew she was in trouble. Her next thought was she needed to get away from this man, and how was she going to do this? So as she prepared her escape, she noticed her tennis shoe was undone and wanted to tie that up as she made her getaway. She knew, being a lot younger than him and fitter, she could definitely outrun him. I mean, I know men over 50 can be super fit and healthy, but if you see a picture of this guy, he does not look like he'll be sprinting anywhere soon. Unfortunately, rather than just making a run for it then and there, she got out to tie her shoe. As she did so, he rained down on her with a sledgehammer. And this is where the nightmare of all nightmares began, as Mary then blacked out. So who is this Lawrence Singleton? Singleton was born in Tampa, Florida on the 28th of July, 1927. Yes, I know this is being released on the 28th of July, but I didn't plan it that way. I only found out today, which is Monday, that his birthday is actually on that date. He was a merchant seaman by trade. He was also a heavy drinker, and when drunk, he became rather sadistic. Singleton did manage to get two women to somehow marry him, his first wife, Shirley. She divorced him in 1971, and then he went on to marry a nurse, Mary Collins, in 1976. He also had a daughter named Deborah, and it sounds as if they had quite the difficult relationship. She herself was only 15 years old too when he committed this crime, And she has spoken out about her father as a way of coping. And as you can imagine, it must be really hard to know that your father is capable of such a heinous crime, a crime that gave him the nickname the Mad Chopper. His daughter has spoken about how she moved and changed her name. She obviously fears him. She even called the parole board before he was released to say he should not get out. She knew he would get out early and wanted to let them know he was still a danger to not only her, but everyone else around him. She pleaded with them, but to no avail, and was simply told to get a restraining order, which, let's face it, it doesn't really do you much good waving around a piece of paper when someone is threatening you with their life. But back to Mary. When she finally woke up and she was in the back of his van, she was tied up, and this is when he began raping her. He raped her around 6 times, and then he eventually fell asleep. When he fell asleep, Mary wanted to die. All she could think about was death and feeling she couldn't handle what was happening to her. When he awoke, Mary began begging to set her free, and she told him she wouldn't tell anyone, which is of course a common occurrence when being kidnapped, but unfortunately with all the murders we have in the world, we know that this tactic does not really work. Mary was dealing with pure evil here, and to think she could somehow appeal to his sensitive side is something we would all do, but the act he was committing was so bad, it would show that there really wasn't any sensitive side to him to actually appeal to. He is just pure evil. As she lay there into the next day, asking to be set free, she just kept saying to him, "Set me free, set me free." She was awake the whole time and saw the sun rising. At this stage, Mary is still completely naked from the attack, and they are in the middle of nowhere. He then pulls her from the van and he tells her, "You want to be set free? I'll set you free." And this is when Mary sees him pull a hatchet from his toolbox. He then takes a swing at Mary's left arm. She is currently grabbing his arm. And this is when the real confusion and then the realization of what he has done becomes apparent to Mary. Mary is falling, but somehow, how can she be falling while still holding on to his arm? She then looks down and her arm is gone and sees blood spurting out. She feels it all. The burning, the hot flow of the blood, she was aware of it all as her left arm was severed from the elbow. Mary, despite her arm being cut off, still manages to muster up the strength to scream, to kick, to do anything to draw attention to what's happening to her, to make him stop. Even though she is so isolated this time, she still keeps trying. While she is doing this, while she is kicking, while she is screaming, the unimaginable happens. He swings the hatchet down on her right arm. While he goes for her second arm, Mary does not give up. She continues to kick and scream, and by doing this, she makes the job a lot harder for him, and he has to chop away at the arm to actually cut it off. And while Mary laid on the ground, she saw him in the distance shaking his own arm. Confused by this, Mary continued to stare to see why he was doing this. When he had cut her arm off, she was grabbing his arm. The shaking was Singleton freaking out as Mary's arm was clasped tightly to his. Mary was lying on the ground watching this thing shaking his arm just to get her arm off, and I can't even imagine what that must be like to witness. As Mary is telling the story, she rubs her eyes with a tissue to wipe away the tears, and in this we see that both of her hands are now hooks. After the frantic shaking to release his arm, he then comes back to Mary and started to move her. Mary believed that he thought she was dead, so she lets him believe this. As if it couldn't get much worse, he then proceeds to pick her up like a bag of rubbish and throws her over a 30-foot cliff on Interstate 5 near Del Puerto Canyon, sorry for butchering that, California. This is where her flight or fight mode comes in. She seriously kicks that into gear and she does the unthinkable. Not only has she been kidnapped, raped, beaten, thrown over a cliff, alive, I might add, she now has 4 broken ribs from the impact, but she is still not going to be beaten yet, not this girl. She is not done. She laid at the bottom bleeding to death, naked and battered, not knowing where he was. Had he left? Did he stay? By now, Mary was feeling quite sleepy and cold and just wanted to lay down and rest. But a voice in her head told her, "You got to keep going. He could do this to another person," and she couldn't let that happen. People had to know what happened so he couldn't get away with it and do it again. After all this, after everything she has been through, she is still thinking of other people and their safety. To go through the most horrific ordeal and then have it that you just think of others shows what an amazing person you are. And to be only 15 and capable of that is truly amazing. Mary knows she needs to climb out of this canyon if there is any chance for her to tell her story and to stop this from happening to anyone else. As she realizes the mammoth task ahead of her, with no hands, I might add, she knows she needs to prevent herself from losing any more blood. To stop the bleeding, she packed dirt into the stubs of her arms where they were severed to either stop the bleeding or at least slow it down. She then crawls up a cliff. She dragged her beaten body up that cliff and she managed to hear traffic in the distance, so she followed that noise. She just walked and walked and then she saw a red car. She remembers it so well, the red car with no roof. She calls to them for help and they just drove by. I can imagine as she did, the sight that came upon them must have been terrifying. Literally something out of a horror movie, but could you just drive by and leave her there? I would like to think I wouldn't. I wonder how those two men feel now knowing that what happened to her and they could have actually stopped to help her. There was two of them, so this little girl wasn't going to take them down, or were they worried that the threat was coming up behind her? Who knows? This is all conjecture, as I'm sure I don't think they ever came forward. Mary kept going, hoping another car would stop to help her. Another car did in fact pass, and this time it did stop. It was a couple on their honeymoon. They pulled over and put her in their truck. Mary remembers it was an old truck and she remembers the sound of it. One thing to note when watching her speak is the certainty in which she recalls every detail. Unfortunately, we do not get enough people who survive, so we rarely get such insight, but she remembers it all, every last detail, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. Once in the truck, Mary was on her way to get help. She was soon put into a helicopter and taken to a hospital. Mary explains how she lost over half the blood in her body and the remainder of the blood in her body went to a toxic level. When Mary is talking here, she speaks of how her body just took it. I guess I was that desperate to live. After all that happened to her, how did she survive this? She's also, when she's telling the story of how she survived this and her body just wanted her to live, she has this little smile on her face. It's a very small smile and I love that, and it's just, it, to me, it's basically a fuck you to Singleton after everything he did to her. So the cops finally get hold of Singleton 10 days after he attacked Mary. But Mary, unfortunately, would have to face him again in court. As you can imagine, seeing him again was a scary experience for Mary, as she was placed only a few feet away from him while she was on the witness stand. As Mary left the courtroom, for some reason, they made it so she had to walk past him, inches away from him, in fact, and she heard him mutter, "If it's the last thing I do, I will finish the job." And he actually admitted later on saying that to her. Why in these situations are the victims put in these positions where they have to be in such close proximity to the person who committed such atrocities towards them? After the case was finished, Vincent was awarded $2.56 million, I think it was, from Singleton for what he did. But there is, of course, one problem. He was broke. He only had about 200 quid. Of savings, so I don't understand the point of telling someone they have to give you this much money if they don't have it. So what was his punishment? Well, his punishment was a poor excuse of a sentence. He was sentenced to 14 years in prison for the rape and attempted murder. The San Diego Superior Court Judge Earl Mass said, "If I had the power, I would send him to prison for the rest of his unnatural life." This was the maximum sentence in California at the time, but for some strange reason, he got out after around 8 years. 8 years for what he did. I know she survived, but that was because of Mary. He bloody tried extremely hard to kill her. So why get out after such a short period of time? Why not at least do the 14 years? Singleton was paroled in 1987, and Mary was terrified he would stick to that threat and actually come and kill her. When he was released, as you can imagine, there was outrage. People protested and they actually got hold of him and wanted to kill him. But unfortunately, he was rescued and he was housed in a trailer on prison grounds. I think it was in San Quentin prison for his own protection at the cost of the taxpayers. I'm sure they were very pleased about that. No one wanted him and they made it very hard for him to rejoin society. So he had no choice but to live in a trailer on prison grounds. I really didn't realize that that was a thing. One thing that came out of this, though, was the Singleton Bill, which was passed in California after the outrage of Singleton's early release and, of course, his lenient sentence of 14 years. The bill would prevent early release of criminals who committed acts of torture in their crimes, and this allowed for a sentence of 25 years to life. Throughout this whole ordeal, though, Singleton was such a victim. He even tried to say that she was, and I quote, a $10 a night whore, and that someone else had been in the car and he hadn't done anything wrong. And as if it couldn't get even any worse with this scumbag, he, yes, Singleton, he decides to sue Mary for forcible kidnap for the purposes of robbery. He starts spouting some shit about how Mary was threatening to accuse to rape him. Now, if somebody is accusing you of that and you haven't done it, I can understand you getting pissed off, but you don't fucking cut off their arms and throw them over a cliff. And, you know, he even struggled some nights and he couldn't sleep and he threw up a few times, but luckily the court threw this ridiculous complaint out. But like I said, he did unfortunately get out and he should not have been released because he then went on to kill another person, and that was mother of three, Roxanne Hayes. A witness, Hitson, noticed an horrific ordeal and saw a naked man, Singleton, hunched over a body on a couch. Hitson ran from the home to inform his uncle, who was outside. Hitson, after hearing another cry, kicked the door in, but was greeted by the sounds of bones being crushed as Singleton pounded down on Roxanne. Hitson and his uncle called the police, but unfortunately, when the police arrived, Hayes was not responsive and had been stabbed multiple times in the upper body. Dr. Miller, a medical examiner, concluded that Roxanne had been stabbed 6 times on her torso and 1 to the face. Also, defensive wounds were found on her hands, which shows she really fought and also she felt many of the blows. This prick, while in court, then tries to turn it back to Roxanne. You know, forever the victim. He said he got in a fight with her because she tried to grab his wallet, saying that she tried to stab him. He's such a fucking victim. Luckily, we got a better result this time for the crime and he got a charge of first degree murder. He did get the death penalty, thank God, by a vote of 10-2. Mary even helped seal his fate when she went to testify on Roxanne's behalf. She was brave enough to go into every little detail about what he had done to her and quoted as saying, "I was raped, I had my arms cut off, he used a hatchet, he left me to die." Of course, his defence tried to say it was another, you know, her oopsie by Singleton. He had just got a little bit emotional and killed her. But luckily, after only 4 hours, the jury saw through all his bullshit. I am one of those people, I'm not really in favour of the death penalty, but I do feel it's easy for me to say that because I've never experienced the murder or, a brutal attack on someone. But this guy, I wouldn't blink if he did get killed in the death chamber. But even to the end, till he died, he kept going on about how his trial was unfair, poor him, woe is me, I'm the victim. And I've never understood why do people commit such heinous acts and then act as though they are the victim? They are the ones to suffer. And this is what this guy is. Also, I think the law is something that will forever confuse me. We hear people saying, you know, people will be imprisoned for the most minor thing and then a man like this gets released on good behaviour. Laws needed to be changed to stop people like him from ever seeing the light of day. Singleton actually never made it to the death chamber though, as he died of cancer on death row on the 28th of December 2001 at the North Florida Reception Centre in Stark. But at least now there is no chance of him ever getting to Mary, and she doesn't need to worry about any of his threats anymore. When he died, Mary didn't really feel any relief. She needed to know that what was in his dark soul, what made him do what he did, and she felt that she was robbed of the opportunity to actually get those questions answered. But I don't think he would have ever answered them. I don't think he would have been the type of person to sit down and actually explain why he did it. Because to him, he did it because he had no choice, basically. Seeing her sons, though, they were very relieved when he went and when he died. And this helped Mary. And she felt as though that was good enough. If it was good enough for her boys, it's good enough for her. And, you know, she didn't have to worry about her sons anymore, this man coming after them. Most of the conversation with Mary, though, when she discusses what actually happened, there isn't much going on there sometimes. She comes across as a really beaten down woman. Mentally, she seems quite disconnected from the event. She's very soft spoken, and at times it feels like she's talking about this happening to someone else. But to be honest, I would want to disconnect myself from it as much as I could too. Although at times when discussing getting into the van, Mary talks about how she didn't even think about what type of person he was or the situation. She was just tired and wanted to get home, and to her he looked harmless. I think this is also a case of how we view people, you know, on their looks and their appearance. I don't know what the boogeyman looks like, but he isn't ever what we think he is or her. Yes, some may look a bit questionable, but that isn't a reason to think they're a rapist or a killer. So always, always best to just say no, play safe. But as mentioned back in, you know, then it was very different times. I myself may have hitchhiked every now and again. I lived in the west of Ireland when I was a teenager, and between the ages of 14 and 17, I did hitchhike, but I hitchhiked with a friend, except on one occasion when I did do it by myself, and I was utterly terrified, and I never did it again. And while Ireland was a very, I felt like a very safe place, this was the late 80s, early 90s, and not much really went on in terms of horrific crimes, but it only takes one time, I guess. But having said that, there was a few girls who vanished in the late 90s in Ireland, all over the country. And I think to this day, they still don't know what happened to them. So maybe that's something I could look into for a future episode. But when it comes to hitchhiking, I would highly go against it, and I wouldn't pick up anyone that watched hitchhiking. I will say one thing. I do find it quite upsetting that this could happen to somebody and there's no medical care there available for them to get like decent hands prosthetics. You know, apparently she needs new ones and she can't afford to do it. And I just think, you know, because in England we have a really good, you know, better healthcare system where we don't have to pay for it basically. But there, it's just, I can't believe that this actually happened to her and no one is stepping up to pay for it. I wish I had the money to pay for it because I would, but I just don't understand how this can happen to a person and this is what they're left with. And when you listen to her talk, she's just such a calm person. There's no bitterness there. And, you know, you wouldn't blame her if there was. So yeah, that's just something that it really bothers me when I see those hooks and when I hear that they need, you know, updating. And she just can't do that because of how expensive things are in America when it comes to healthcare. It's just ridiculous. Mary now, as mentioned, has a family for herself with her two boys who seem to be her rock. Her dream of being a dancer when she was younger was, of course, destroyed by Singleton. But despite having hooks for hands, Mary has become quite the artist and has even sold some of her work. How, I will never know, but Mary has managed to move on from her horrific ordeal. As she puts it, most people know me because of who I am, not just what happened to me. They just assume I was born this way. And on that note, I shall leave it there. But before I go, I want to tell you about a podcast that I absolutely love. I do love it so much that I actually became a patron of it. I'm a patron of only two podcasts in the world. One is, of course, my favorite podcast of all time, and that is The Last Podcast on the Left. And now, of course, this one, and that is Reverie True Crime.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Paige gives you a well-researched show with engaging content. Her voice is extremely easy to listen to and the topics just flow. And she's got a great accent. She's from the South in America. She's from Mississippi. And I cannot recommend this podcast enough. So go check her out on wherever you listen, Apple, Spotify, more. Also follow her on social media sites at Reverie True Crime, Instagram, Twitter. I think she's on Facebook as well. I don't really use Facebook. And make sure you rate and review her and join her Patreon as well, because you'll get some bonus episodes as well there. So I will now bid you farewell and hope you have enjoyed my first True Crime Tuesday episode. There will be more to come because I've really enjoyed doing it. Thank you for listening and don't forget to rate and review on iTunes for me. Be nice. And you can also find me on Instagram as Once Upon a Nightmare Podcast, on Twitter as A Nightmare Pod, on Letterboxd as A Nightmare Pod, or you can email me, which is quite old school these days, on onceuponanightmarepod@gmail.com, and I will chat to you very soon, so stay safe out there. Bye. For any sources you want on this episode, please look at the show notes.